was in for the night.
You can check us off, I said. I got up off the bed and picked up my duffel, rummaging inside for flannel pants and my toothbrush. As I passed Bella on the way into the bathroom, she said,
Hey, Graham, did Ricker tell you that you were on the same team for part of high school?
We covered that, he said. Standing at the sink, I brushed my teeth. Thanks to the mirror, I could see Bella reach up to cup Graham's face in two hands. She rose up on her tiptoes and brought her mouth over his. With my toe, I kicked the door shut behind me. But because the doors in cheap hotel rooms are made with all the sturdiness of a rice cracker, I heard Graham's comment a long minute later while I was pulling up my sleep pants. That was nice and everything, Bella, but did I pass your breathalyzer test?
Maybe that's not why I kissed you,
she snapped. The hell it isn't. Her voice got tight.
You're right. I don't like you at all.
Night, Bella.
Night, moron.
I waited until I heard the hotel room door close before I came out again. Both beds were untouched, so I chose the nearest one without asking whether Graham had a preference. He and I did not need to have any conversations with the word bed in them. Pulling back the bedspread, I climbed in, rolling to put my back to him. It was body language that tried to say, Nope, no awkwardness here. Graham spent a few minutes in the bathroom, too. You want this shut off, right? He asked. I turned to find him standing by the lamp, fully dressed, including his hockey jacket and shoes. Yeah, I answered. He clicked off the light. I'm going for a walk, he said, his voice low. Okay. That was against curfew, but I wasn't going to argue with him. I just need, you know, headspace. Pushing up on one elbow, I asked, Do you still sleep like shit? Since I'd known him, he was a terrible sleeper, the only middle school insomniac I'd ever met. Yep. Absently, he reached a hand up to probe the back of his head, where it had hit the wall before. Shit, I'm sorry about your head. He gave his chin a shake as if warding off my apology. All our previous shit is covered under the treaty, no? That made me smile. And for a second, his expression softened. But then he shut it down, turning away from me. He flicked off the bathroom light. Then, without a word, he opened the door and left. I lay there in the dark for a long time, wondering what to think. How odd to find myself, after 5 years, lying sleeplessly in another strange bed, wondering where Graham was. Part of me would always be hurt. When I was beaten and scared, I'd waited for him to call me. I'd slept with my phone in my hand in that hospital bed, so that nobody would try to keep him from me when he finally called. But he never did. Not once. I wasn't 16 anymore, though, and the years had provided some much-needed distance from that awful time. What I hadn't wanted to face at 16 was the fact that my phone made outgoing calls, too. I was looped up on pain meds for a few days, not a few years. Even after they shipped me off to Vermont, I could have sat myself in one of the wicker chairs on my grandmother's porch and called him. I didn't, though, because I was scared to hear that he didn't want me anymore. Fuck, we were 16. We'd confided in nobody, and we were too afraid to ask for help. So I could either carry around this childhood grudge for the rest of my life, or try to set it down. Seems like a no-brainer, right? When I finally fell asleep, I was still alone in the room.
Graham. The following weekend, we had practices only, no games. It was our lull before the storm. Regular season games were about to kick in at full force. So Bella and Hartley and I sat a long time over Saturday brunch in the Beaumont dining hall, drinking coffee and shooting the shit. Hartley's girlfriend, Corey, told us a funny story about holding tryouts for an empty goalie position on the women's team. But I was feeling almost too lazy to listen. Outside of the old arched windows, the fall leaves made a yellow carpet in the courtyard. Sometimes this place was like a freaking postcard for ye old college experience. Like a total sap, I loved everything about it. Eventually, I got my lazy butt up to go, and Bella stood up too. I'll walk you out, she said. Together, we started down the granite steps and out into the autumn day. The air had that Harkness smell. A mixture of decaying leaves and coffee beans. Bella had a giant duffel on one shoulder and a box under her arm, so I scooped the duffel off her shoulder as we walked along. She gave me a smile. Aren't you the gentleman? Once in a while, when it suits me. What are you up to today?
I've been at the library for a couple of hours. You?
The team errands. Can I pawn one off on you? It's on your way.
Sure.
She stopped and beckoned for the duffel I was carrying. Unzipping it, Bella pulled out a new Harkness hockey jacket in its plastic wrapper.
Can you drop this off? It's Rickers. He lives in McCarran.
Oh, Christ. We don't know if he's home, though, I said. Why don't you give me a different errand? I don't want to carry that around all day if he's out.
She pressed the jacket into my chest.
I just texted him from the dining hall, and he's there. He even propped the outside open for me. It will take you 2 minutes. He's in the first entryway on the left, third floor.
Damn it. I couldn't think of a decent reason to turn her down.
Okay. You're the best. See you at practice tonight. She hefted her duffel again, which was now not quite so large. She walked away without a backward glance, having no idea what she'd just asked me to do. Even though Ricker and I had cleared the air in Boston, we weren't pals. When I'd walked out of that hotel room after our crazy-ass conversation, I was shaking like a leaf. A few laps on foot around Boston had helped. But I knew I couldn't stay in that hotel room with Ricker. Talking to him had stirred up a lot of raw memories for me. I couldn't lay there in the dark, listening to him breathe, and relive the sound of pounding feet in that alley where we'd been attacked.
Cocksuckers, they'd yelled. Faggots.
It used to be that when I closed my eyes, the voices were always right there, waiting for me, along with the sound of their laughter, and the heavy thud of Ricker's body hitting the ground when he'd tripped. Once in a while, I still heard that sound in my dreams.
Get the other one, someone had shouted.
I'd switched into survival mode, and I just ran. Even after I'd gotten away, I kept running. I ran a mile in the wrong direction. When I'd stopped, the streets were unfamiliar. On shaking legs, I'd found a city bus stop. But I wasn't that familiar with the bus system. It took me a couple of hours to get home. I was so freaked out when I finally got home that I might have broken down, telling my parents everything. But the house was empty. There was a note from my mom on the perfectly clean kitchen counter telling me that she and my father had gone to walk around the sculpture garden, while I had left Ricker all alone to be beaten. Panicked, pacing my kitchen, I'd had to run to our bathroom to throw up. I fell asleep on the bathroom floor after that. But somehow when my parents came home, I'd gotten up and tried to act as normal as possible. Down in the basement, the game controllers sat next to each other on the sofa, right where Ricker and I had left them. So I'd knocked them off onto the floor and curled up in a ball and commenced hating myself, and I'd never really stopped. Last weekend in Boston, I'd given those memories a couple more hours to churn. After pacing the streets, I walked back to the block where our team's hotel was. But instead of going inside, I went into the hotel on the next corner. Sitting at the bar, I dampened those old memories with beer. Only beer. Bella would be so proud. Then I'd gone to the check-in desk and asked for a room. $200 later, I walked into another hotel room. I didn't even turn on the lights. I set my phone alarm, dropped my jeans and jacket, climbed into the bed, and slept. The next morning, I'd snuck back into the team's hotel and into Ricker's room to retrieve my things. He'd been eating breakfast with the rest of my teammates. Since then, we'd spoken only once. After the final game, we'd found ourselves standing next to each other at a fast food counter.
You okay?
He asked without removing his eyes from the lit menu board above our heads.
Yeah, we're solid, I'd said.
That was it.
Until now.
On my way up the stairs in McCarran, I passed the rooms where Hartley and Corey had lived last year. When I got to the third floor, one of the doors was ajar. I tapped on it with my knuckles.
Yeah,
he rasped. The familiar sound of his voice clocked me over the head like it always did, and I made myself take a deep breath before I pushed on the door.
Please be fully dressed, I prayed as I entered.
Ricker reclined on his bed, two different textbooks open in front of him. When he glanced up, I saw him do a double take. In fact, he sat up so fast that one of the books slapped shut. Hey, I said. Bella asked me to drop this for you.
Thanks,
he recovered, shoving the books aside and standing up. Heads up. I tossed him the bundle and he caught it with a grin, turning it around in his hands. Then he ripped the plastic and tore it back, exposing the wool and leather.
Nice.
Extracting the jacket, he turned it around so that I could see the back, where Ricker was spelled out.
Well, put it on already, I said. You know you want to.
He smiled again because I was right. What is it about these things, anyway? It's just a jacket, but it was everything. I don't know, I said. Maybe it's that you have to bust your ass 6 days a week for 7 months a year to own one. He slid one arm into the jacket. It must be it. He pulled it on, straightening the shoulders. He spun around once. I'm in. If it were any other guy in the world, I would have said, looking good, or something like that. And he did, of course. But I didn't trust myself. You're in, I agreed. Ricker took 2 steps across his tiny room to reach the little closet in the corner. From there he yanked another jacket, this one red with blue sleeves. Funny. I thought I was in when they gave me this, he said, showing me the St. B's logo. I don't even know why I kept this thing. Probably out of spite. What happened there, anyway?
Heck.
Even as I asked, I knew it was the wrong thing to do. I should have just gotten the hell out of there. But the question had been burning a hole in my brain, and it kind of slipped out. Ricker's smile turned wry. Now there's a cautionary tale. He shoved the St. B's jacket back into the closet. You don't have to tell me. With a shrug, he sat down on the edge of his bed. And when he raised those big brown eyes to mine, I couldn't have looked away to save my life. It was a photo of me, and I sure as hell didn't know it had been taken. A photo, I repeated like an idiot. He wiggled his eyebrows. You know, a photo. Anyway, during the spring term, my fuck buddy decided he wanted more than I was willing to give him. He got mad at me and he emailed the picture to the coach. I got chucked off the team the next day. It was a real struggle to keep my face impassive, given all that I just heard. The first thought that hit me was how ugly that betrayal was. My second thought was, but I hurt him worse. And lastly, Ricker had a fuck buddy. I tucked that away to think about later. God, I said finally. How did you not know about the picture? He shook his head, that lopsided smile on his face. Well, when he took it, I had his balls in my mouth. Couldn't exactly see what he was doing with his hands. I laughed, but it came out sounding like a choking fit as I struggled to fight off that image of Ricker kneeling down in front of... Jesus Christ, I might get hard just thinking about it. What a jackass, I said, wondering how to change the subject. You think? I heard Big D telling somebody in the locker room the other day, hey, never stick it in crazy. I wanted to say that it was true for men too, but I didn't want to get my ass kicked. Another bark-like laugh escaped me, and I could feel myself blushing. My face was probably as red as his St. B's jacket by now. We both chuckled for a minute, but then it died back to silence. And now I was having trouble meeting his eyes, so mine roamed the room. Hey, is that you on a snowboard? There was a picture tacked up over his desk. It was the only thing on the wall, actually. It showed 2 figures suspended in the air mid-jump. And even though they were covered in a whole lot of cold weather gear, the one nearest to the camera had Ricker's lazy smile. Yeah, it only took us about 30 tries to get that picture. He smiled at the photo as if remembering the day. You ever tried snowboarding? It's pretty great. I shook my head. Michigan is still flat, just in case you forgot. That's why we skate, remember? Looks like fun, but I'm not sure I'd like the feeling of having my feet tied together. That takes some getting used to. I found myself leaning back against the doorframe, continuing the conversation instead of cutting it short. That's not what I came up here to do. But I'd missed this. How many hours had Ricker and I spent just shooting the shit during the 3 years of our friendship? 1,000? Probably more. After he'd left, there was nobody I'd ever been so close to. Christ, that was depressing. A snowboard is just another blade with edges, right? Ricker was saying. So it shocked the hell out of me that I couldn't even stand up on the thing. And my high school boyfriend was like, just do this. Ricker made a hand motion of someone zigzagging down a mountain. My brain snagged on high school boyfriend. I finally paid cash for a real lesson because it was either that or we were going to kill each other. And 2 hours later, I could handle most of the groomers. The next weekend, I could do even more. It comes fast once you get the basic motion, and I didn't want to be the only Vermonter who couldn't snowboard. Vermonter, huh? Ricker leaned back on his hands, looking more relaxed than he had before. I fucking love Vermont, honestly. It made me actually like high school. Cool. It was cool. And if I were smarter, I would have played hockey for the University of Vermont and avoided the shit-splosion at St. B's. But then you wouldn't be sitting here talking to me right now, I thought immediately. And that was my cue to leave. I checked my watch, like the tool that I am. Shit, I better get going. See you at practice? Ricker blinked, probably confused by my abrupt departure. Sure, he said after a beat. See you over there. He dragged one of his books back into his lap. Thanks for the delivery. It's nothing, I said. And then I practically left a vapor trail on my way out of his building. Talking to Ricker in his room had been the most vivid 10 minutes of my week. Naturally, I vowed never to go back there. 6. Odd Man Rush. Odd Man Rush. Creating a scoring opportunity by outnumbering the opposing defense in the zone. Graham. The only time I ever ate at the Slippery Elm, one of Harkness's few fancy restaurants, was when my parents came to town. This time when I arrived at the entrance to the sleek dining room, none of my family had arrived yet, but the last text I'd received had the rents checking into their hotel, so I knew it wouldn't be long. The place smelled like turkey, stuffing, garlic, and herbs. My stomach growled in appreciation. When a smiling hostess came to rescue me, she asked if I had a reservation. It should be under Graham. 4 people. Follow me. She led me to a nice table by the window, where I received a wine list and the kind of handwritten menu which informed more than it invited you to make selections. But on Thanksgiving, that was only fair. The chefs in the kitchen were busy putting snooty touches on plate after plate of turkey with self-consciously fancy side dishes. This year, we had hockey games scheduled during both the Thanksgiving and the Christmas breaks. So while most students booked flights for leisurely stays at home, the team would return early to what felt like a ghost town. Not that I'm complaining. Hockey was a big deal at Harkness. That's partly because hockey was a New England thing, and partly because Ivy League colleges can compete at a higher level in hockey than in a money sport like football. And somehow I'd bluffed and blundered my way into the center of it all. So my parents had flown in from Michigan to eat overpriced turkey with me on Thanksgiving, and then hang around to watch me play Saturday night. It was all pretty glam. A server glided over to my table. He did, really. He glided. Dressed in a crisp white shirt with a black vest, it was obvious that the restaurant was going for a traditional look. But instead of stodgy slacks, this guy had upped the ante with a pair of very tight black jeans. They hugged his ass in a way that I was trying not to notice. So I looked at his face instead. He was probably about my age, or a couple of years older, with shiny black hair and blue eyes. Can I bring you a drink while you wait for the rest of your party? His voice was huskier than I was expecting. Damn it. For a second there, I got a little stuck on how attractive he was. Shit. I looked down at the wine list as if I knew fuck all about wine. Deflector shields engaged. What do you have on tap? He rattled off a string of choices, and I ordered the first beer on the list just to get rid of him. May I see your ID, sir? Great. A Coke would have been the way to go. Live and learn. I dug my wallet out of my back pocket and handed it up to him, my gaze in the doorway. Now would be a great time for my parents to walk in, or even my harpy of a sister. No such luck. He studied my driver's license for a beat longer than really seemed necessary. Don't look, I coached myself. Don't look. I looked, and his eyes met mine immediately. Nice picture, he said, handing it back to me. He didn't wink or anything cheesy like that, but there was an unmistakable flare of interest there. Stellar job, deflector shields. I took my ID back, shoved it into my pocket, and then took a big slug of the cold water he'd poured me just for something to do. He went away, and mercifully, it was a different server who delivered my beer. I looked out the window and wondered how long it took my parents to check into a hotel. And where was my sister? Lori was supposedly taking the Metro North up from New York, where she worked as a minion on Wall Street. I hadn't seen her since the summer, or anyone else for that matter, except my teammates and my textbooks. November had been brutally busy. We'd played 6 hockey games that month, winning 5 and tying 1. It was a streak unheard of in Harkness history. While our team had been solid for the past 2 years, we'd never sat so firmly atop the Eastern standings before. If I didn't think it would jinx me, I would have taken a screenshot of our record and hung it on the wall. Even better, I'd managed to pull my weight in every game. The truce that Ricker and I established probably had something to do with it. Since our chat in his room, we'd had a nod-and-continue-walking-by relationship, which suited me fine. He knew things about me that I wished he didn't know. I could never quite forget that with a single drunken utterance, "Hey, do you want to hear a funny story about Graham?" he could end my life as I knew it. But he didn't do that. And like he promised, he'd stopped reminding me that he could. For the last few weeks, we'd been just two teammates on the ice. Ricker just did his job feeding shots to Hartley, and I did my job warding off the other team's offense. For the most part, my life had slipped back into control. Until tonight. Earlier this week, I'd realized that my parents' visit to Harkness would rain down a new shower of awkward into my life. And that's why I sat there gulping my pint in the restaurant, wondering how I could get a second one without making eye contact with the sexy waiter. Hell, my parents' arrival in town made me want to change my drink order from ale to bourbon. Mikey! I looked up to see my sister hoofing it in a skirt and heels across the room towards me. And my parents were right behind her. I stood up to greet them, taking the onslaught of affection like a man. My sister squeezed me, my mother tousled my hair and kissed me. My father gave me the regulation one-armed man hug with a back slap. We all sat down and the family chatter began. My sister complained about her job while my father asked me questions about our last game and what coach had in mind for Saturday. Mr. Tightpants came back to take drink orders and drop off a basket of warm cornbread. I took a single surreptitious glance at his ass as he walked away. I usually wouldn't risk it when my family was around, but the place was crowded. I could have been looking at anybody. "I got Red Wings tickets for over Christmas," my dad said. "Yeah?" I dragged my attention back to the table. "That's awesome. If we drive down on the 26th and return the next day, you'll have another 3 days before you have to fly back." "Can't wait," I said, and it was true. I would have gotten tickets to the Winter Classic, but I know my game schedule. But Dad only beamed. "Too busy winning." He grew up in Texas, where they don't play much hockey. He had been a big football fan his whole life until I started skating. Now he followed the Red Wings, and me, of course, with red-blooded enthusiasm. Three servers approached our table at once, so that our five salad plates could land on the table almost simultaneously. That's how fancy a joint this place was. As a stylized pile of greens landed in front of me, I got a whiff of men's cologne. I didn't even have to look up to guess which waiter had just served me, leaning the smallest fraction of a degree closer than necessary. With my deflector shields firmly in place, I didn't even blink. "Peddle it elsewhere, buddy." Although my empty beer glass was exchanged for a full one, even though I hadn't asked for it. So I was grateful, but not grateful enough to spare him a thankful glance. Too risky. I forked up a bite of the fern-like salad. There were dried cranberries and some kind of candied nuts in there. It was great. As long as they didn't run out of turkey in the next 10 minutes. "This is so good," my sister said. "It was a great idea to come here, Mom. Thank you." 3 years older than I was, Lori had always been the family kiss-up. "I'm just sorry you can't stay the night," my mother told her. "We would have gotten you a room." "I have to work tomorrow," she grimaced. "That is just ridiculous." "Beth," my father warned, "those training programs are rigorous. Lori is busy mowing down the competition." My father loved that phrase. Mowing down the competition. Dad loved winning. There were a couple of tricky years there in middle school when I wasn't doing so well in football. He tried to help, but I could just feel his frustration with me. The fact that he didn't know much about hockey when I started playing was actually part of the appeal. That and Ricker wanted to try out. See, that was just another thing that made me a solid contender for Jackass of the Year. I'd spent the first 2 months of the year wishing Ricker would just get the hell off my hockey team. But I never would have touched a stick in the first place if it weren't for him. I'd been dining on a steady diet of anguish and irony all season. And now, salad greens. When the turkey finally arrived, I was too hungry to even notice who served it. So at least I had that going for me. And the food was good. Really good. My mother's brainstorm about how to have a family Thanksgiving in spite of my game schedule had paid off. And I was just thinking optimistic thoughts about dessert, when my father began to ask questions about coach's forward lineup. And then I felt the dread roll back in waves, the same tension I choked on during the first 7 weeks of the year. Because my parents were going to recognize Ricker. There was nothing to be done about it. I took a deep breath. "Hey, you know what's funny?" I asked, trying for casual. I'd gone back and forth all morning, trying to decide whether to say something today or just let them notice him at the game. But I was afraid there would be some kind of loud mom reaction, an ear-splitting scream of surprise when she saw him. I was afraid to hear her squealing for all the world to hear. "Mike! Why didn't you tell me that Ricker was on your team?" Anything but that.
What's funny?
My mom prompted me. You'll never guess who turned up on the team this year. Remember Johnny Ricker? First her eyes went wide, then her mouth dropped open. And unless I was mistaken, her eyes got wet.
Jesus, really?
Okay, that was a more dramatic reaction than I'd hoped for. Yeah. I chased the last bit of pureed sweet potato around on my plate, but when I tried to eat it, my mouth was suddenly as dry as the Sahara.
Wow, honey, I'd always wondered what happened to him. He just vanished to his grandmother's. I worried about him.
My sister piped up. You mean because he got beat up and then kicked out for being gay?
Now that was just a rumor,
my mother admonished her. But now I was quietly freaking out, because I didn't know my mother had ever heard a rumor like that. His family all but FedExed him to the grandmother, my father said, folding and refolding his napkin.
So he's okay?
My mother asked.
He's doing well?
I gave the world's most casual shrug. He's a second-line winger. Seems okay to me.
Well, that's...
My mother swallowed hard.
That's just amazing. I always liked that boy, such a sweetie, even though his mother was such a witch. And now you have your friend back.
I didn't have a response that would pass Mom's finely honed bullshit radar, so I said nothing at all. Speaking of your friends, my father broke in, how was that young lady you were seeing? Bella? I smiled, because it was easy to smile when thinking of her. It's just casual, Dad. But Bella's great, I see a lot of her. Because she's the team manager and on a personal mission to make me drink less. And good luck with that. There's a girl who knows a lot about hockey, Dad said. Damn straight. It wasn't until I picked up my third beer and drained it that I realized which words I'd used to agree with him.
Jesus. Aging Dr. Freud.
My mother reached across the table to grab my hand.
Mike, why don't you invite Johnny Ricker out for dinner with us on Saturday?
Nah, I said. He'll be with his own people, probably. That's nice, though, Mom. She frowned at me.
Aren't the two of you still friends?
Another carefully choreographed shrug. He's in a different house. Does anyone know where the men's is? I asked. Excuse me a minute. I needed a time out. But I found the bathroom, where classical guitar music was playing over a sound system. And I took my time. On the return trip, I spotted our waiter at the table. He was executing that upscale restaurant maneuver of pushing in my empty chair and refolding my napkin. I held back an extra second to make sure he was clear of the place before I came back. When I pulled out my chair, something fluttered to the floor. Reaching down, I closed my fingers around a slip of paper. Later, when I'd freed myself of the family and retired to my room to drink alone, I inspected it. Alex, he'd printed on it, followed by a phone number. I crumpled it into a tiny pill-sized thing and threw it in the trash.
Ricker. I didn't go home to my grandmother's house for Thanksgiving because I didn't have a ride up to Vermont. If I were a smarter man, I'd make the effort to figure out who else at Harkness lived near Burlington. There was a bus route, but the bus company somehow turned the 4-hour trip into an 8-hour tour of New England's major highways. Even though Gran was disappointed, it didn't make sense to travel for 16 hours round trip when I had just 2 days off. For Thanksgiving Day, Coach invited everyone who was stuck in town over to his home for supper. I made myself go even though I wasn't feeling it. Bella had taken the train to New York to see her parents. Without her as a buffer, dinner at Coach's house sounded like a long few hours. But it was fine. This time, the social lubricants were copious platters of food and a smorgasbord of football on the big screen in the den. Coach's wife was a smiling woman who seemed to enjoy watching a dozen giant college guys help themselves to seconds and thirds. That's what catering is for, she said when I apologized for our collective appetite. You're a smart lady, I said, dropping another dollop of garlic mashed potatoes onto my plate. I've been a coach's wife for 35 years, she said, sipping her wine. You'll learn a thing or two. Did you try the cranberry stuffing? I think it's excellent. Coach's wife was a solid 8 on the Ricker scale, I decided. McCarran Hall was as still as a tomb that weekend. I got a lot of studying done in all that silence. When Saturday night finally rolled around, I was ready to hit the ice. With my duffel over my shoulder, I was just opening the ice-level door when I heard a shriek and the sound of someone calling my name. Johnny Ricker? Stop right there, young man! I turned around to see Graham's mother trotting down the ramp to catch me. Hey, Mrs. G. It's good to see you. I let the rink door fall closed again, and she tackled me in a hug.
You are enormous. Look at you.
She actually reached up to ruffle my hair.
You sat at my kitchen table eating Oreos maybe 50 pounds ago.
Are you telling me I've gotten fat? I teased. I glanced at Graham, who looked like he'd rather be anywhere else but here. This little reunion was making him deeply uncomfortable, so I moved away from the door and he ghosted behind me, slipping into the rink without comment.
Are you coming to Michigan for Christmas?
Mrs. G asked. Probably not. My grandmother's getting older and I'd like to spend time with her when I can. That was all true, although it was also true that unless I started showing an interest in women, my parents were happy to keep up the pretense that I was just too busy on the East Coast to come home.
She's lucky to have you, Graham's mom said. Very lucky.
There was a firmness to the statement that left me wondering how much of my story was common knowledge back in Michigan. One bonus of my exile was that I never had to listen to the gossip about myself. Mrs. G was still beaming at me, and it was easy to smile back. I'd always loved Graham's mom. In fact, I was pretty sure that if it had been Graham instead of me who accidentally ended up coming out of the closet, she would have taken it all in stride. But I guess we'd never know.
I'd better get in there, I told her.
Play safe, she said, grabbing me for a hug.
And don't be a stranger.
Oh, she used to say exactly the same thing before our ninth grade games. Over her shoulder, I saw Bella coming down the ramp, and her keen eyes were taking in the scene of Graham's mother hugging me. Uh-oh. I stepped back and put my hand on the door.
Sure is good seeing you.
Then I opened it and slipped inside. Before the door closed, I heard Bella say, Hi, Mrs. Graham.
Bella, sweetie,
was the last thing I heard before the door fell closed. As I tossed my duffel onto the bench, I did a double take. The whiteboard over my locker area had been changed. Instead of Ricker, it now read Faggot. Oh, for fuck's sake. Leaving it there, I tossed my jacket onto the hook. Jerking the zipper to my duffel open, I had to remind myself to breathe. In, out, in, out. It was just a slur from some coward. It was middle school stuff, really.
Hey, Ricker.
Bella's voice advanced on me from behind.
I didn't know you...
Abruptly, she broke off.
What the fuck?
At her outburst, I felt Hartley's attention swing in our direction, which probably meant that everyone in the room would be staring in about 2.5 seconds. Fan-fucking-tastic. Oh, hell no, Hartley said. He stepped right onto my end of our bench, his pads in my face. With his fingers, he scrubbed away the lettering. What asshole wants to tell me this was his idea of a joke? Hartley turned, looking around the room. Nobody spoke up. Shocker. Just leave it alone, I muttered, pulling my chest padding over my head. No, Hartley argued, hopping down, red-faced. We're not saying that shit in here. This room is a jackass-free zone. The thing was, nobody had actually said it out loud. That would take actual courage. And I'd learned long ago that you had to choose your goddamn battles. It's just a word, I grunted. The only time I really don't want to hear it is from a bunch of guys chasing me with baseball bats. There came a loud crash from the corner. When I turned to look, Graham was busy gathering up the armful of gear that he'd dropped, and then he seemed to abandon it all and turn away, speedwalking through the doorway leading toward the toilets. Breathe, I coached myself. In, out, in, out. There was still a lot of gearing up to be done, so I got busy with the pads and the socks. When I'd almost finished, Bella reappeared in front of me.
Coach wants to see you, she said softly.
Oh, fuck no, I groaned, wanting to kill her for making a federal case about this. I stepped around her and headed for the hallway. Coach was sitting on the end of his own desk when I walked in. Sit down a second, he said. I dropped my ass in a chair and waited. Sorry about that bullshit in the locker room, he said. I put up two hands. Let's not blow it out of proportion, he shrugged. Chicken shit move, right? I only told Bella to let me know if it happened again. Works for me. I felt my shoulders relax. Unfortunately, there's something else we need to talk about. There's a reporter at the Connecticut Standard who's sniffing around. She's figured out that it's pretty unusual to see a transfer approved to another Division I school. She wants the story. Oh, holy... I stopped myself from cursing in front of Coach, but I would rather find faggot written on my forehead than talk to a reporter. What happens if I just say no? Coach chewed on his lip before answering. If you turn down the interview, let's call it a 25% chance that the story just goes away. But if she's any damn good, she'll call St. B's and ask them what happened. She might find someone who feels like weaving the tale, and then you're letting the other side tell it. I let that sink in. Rock, let me introduce you to Hard Place. And if we keep winning, and I think we will, ESPN will be asking the same questions pretty soon. It's unfortunate, son, but the media lives for this shit. So, what are you telling me to do? I'll do whatever you say. And I would, too. I mean, you didn't sign up for any of this shit. He grinned. Actually, I think I did. It's the price of doing business with you, kid. You keep feeding Hartley those lamp ladders, and they can cover you on Good Morning America if they want. I groaned. No, they can't. I don't want to be that guy. I just want to play hockey. I know that. He chuckled. Not everybody wants to be an activist, but you don't have to come off that way. You can just meet the nice lady and tell her the boring version. You lost your place on the team because a coach broke the new regulation. A couple of lawyers argued about it, and the ACAA agreed with your petition. End of story. The way he put it was nice and casual. Coming from Coach's mouth, it didn't sound like daytime television. Still, I'd rather not talk to any reporters, ever. Think about it, Coach said, standing up. We can stall a couple days, because it's a holiday weekend, you know? Now I need you out there skating. Will do. I went back to the locker room and hurried to suit up. Coach gathered everyone else to talk strategy. Alone in the locker room, I took another look at my whiteboard, which was now blank except for smudges. I took a second to wipe it down. And then, with Hartley's marker, I wrote, "Your ad here," in the space. There is nothing like a hockey game to clear your mind. You can't skate that hard while stewing over your life. It just isn't possible. When I'm on the ice, every particle of my consciousness is taken up by the essential activities of breathing, pushing hard, and watching that little black rubber disc. One thing did not escape my notice, though. Graham played a hard-ass defensive game. He was everywhere tonight, slamming the enemy into the boards when they had the puck and tripping them when they tried to get away. Since coming to Harkness, I'd been surprised by just how aggressive he was during games. Tonight, you could argue that he was a little too aggressive. By the end of the second quarter, he'd already drawn penalties for both hooking and slashing. He skated angry. He skated as if he had something to prove. Don't we all?
Graham. We tied the game. Believe it or not, that was progress. Last year, we'd lost to that team twice. In the locker room, I sat down on the bench and peeled off my sweaty pads. My contribution was dubious tonight because I couldn't stay out of the sin bin. When the other team turned up the heat, I got a little crazy. I dug deep, and I hit hard. And I wasn't subtle about it. I drew 3 2-minute penalties, which was two more than Coach had liked. A bulldozer uses more finesse, Coach barked at me the second time I forced the team to fend off a power play. I'm trying, I said, but it wasn't really accurate. The 2 days with my parents, and all their well-intentioned questions, had made me crazy. I'd spent the past 48 hours feeling raw and transparent, so I was already a little nuts before that slur on Ricker's whiteboard freaked me out. And just when I thought I couldn't take any more drama, he had to go and make that crack about guys with baseball bats. I'm not proud of what happened next. Their image has become too claustrophobic for me to take. I tried to zone out a little, to relax, but it was no good. That awful day was 5 years ago. More, actually. But whenever something jogged me back to that ugly moment, I could always feel the pounding feet and the shouting right down to my guts. There was no fighting it. So I'd walked into a bathroom stall and puked, covering the sound with a flush of the toilet. Pussy of the year, right here, people. Just engrave my name on the fricking trophy. By the time we got out in the ice, I was angry enough at myself that it helped me get my mojo back. Tonight, a couple of guys on the opposing team would be icing their ribs, thanks to me. But this was hockey, not intramural frisbee. They basically had it coming just for showing up. Of course, now I felt pretty busted up, too. I stowed my helmet and gloves. It was time to shower, but I was feeling too wrecked to do anything about it. I skated hard during the overtime period, but we couldn't sink one, so our wind song wasn't blasting tonight. It was quiet enough to hear all the conversations going on around me.
"What's you up to tonight?"
Bella asked Ricker and Hardly. Ricker said. "I was trying to decide whether or not to dress up for the drag ball." There was an awkward silence while everyone tried to decide if he was serious. Only Bella laughed.
"Very funny."
"Right?" Ricker grinned. "My night is going to be a bag of Doritos and catching up on SportsCenter, and I should probably order a set of wiper blades for my grandmother's truck. She always buys the wrong size." Hartley slapped him on the shoulder. "Capris first?" "I can probably fit it in."
"Don't spend too much primping, boys," Bella prodded. "I'm starving. Graham, you coming to Capris?"
"Maybe," I said, my voice hoarse from growling at the competition all night. I wasn't feeling social and was therefore on the fence about Capris. But at least it would give me an excuse to say goodbye to my parents. They were on a morning flight out tomorrow. And I was starved, too. Because when you freak out and then puke up your dinner, that happens. The ambiance of Capri's was reassuring to my jangled nerves. There was something about the same old sticky floor and the familiar 30-minute wait for a pie that soothed the guy. The beer flowed and the music was loud enough so that nobody really noticed that I said barely a word to anyone. A few slices of pizza evened me out enough that I could focus on getting my buzz on. Bella kept refilling my beer glass because she was under the mistaken impression that I wouldn't be able to get the job done on Capri's piss water. But whenever she got up to refill a pitcher or stroke one of my teammates' asses, I took a nip from the flask in my pocket. Since most of the student body was still away for Thanksgiving, the team had Capri's to ourselves. That meant I didn't even have to decide whether or not I should try to hook up. The pickings were so slim that nobody would wonder why I didn't bother. Just sitting there like a lump in that booth, breathing in my teammates' chatter was as close to peaceful as my life ever got these days. Fast forward 3 hours or so, and I'd drunk the last of the Johnny Walker in my pocket. Across the room, Bella was busy putting the moves on Frenchie, and so she wasn't going to notice my stagger. That was my cue to go home. With a half-wave to Hartley, I angled my tired body out the back door. I stopped to pee on the nearest secret society, as usual. The cold air was just what I needed. But even so, my drunk guy homing device was flickering a bit. Instead of heading home, I just stood there a while, holding up the granite wall with my shoulders. The whiskey was hitting me hard, and I needed some time to collect myself. Across the street, I saw Ricker emerge from Capri's. He walked quickly up the sidewalk in front of me, as if in a terrible hurry. A second later, I saw why. A girl came flying out too, tapping quickly in her heels to catch up. She hauled herself toward him, calling out to him. I was too far away, or too drunk, to make out what they were saying, but I didn't need to hear the conversation to understand. She was performing a pantomime entitled, "Take Me Home Tonight," and Ricker was doing his best, "No thank you." Pure comedy. They drifted closer to me, Ricker removing her hands from his ass as politely as possible. I laughed aloud then, and Ricker turned toward the sound, startled. "You're not his type," I slurred. "Never will be." The girl's eyes popped wide. She was drunk, too, but nowhere near as drunk as I was, and now she was offended, too. Whoops. "I mean, girls aren't his type," I clarified. She looked at Ricker, and then back at me, and then at Ricker again.
"So you weren't kidding about that?"
Ricker just sighed, looking irritated at both of us. "He can pass for straight, can he?" I laughed. "Some guys hide it well. Like me, for example. Not that it was easy. Lately I spent all my waking hours just trying to keep the cracks in my deflector shields from splitting apart."
"I'm outie,"
the girl said. She'd had enough of Ricker's rejection and enough of my drunk philosophizing. Crossing her arms, she spun on her heel and walked away.
"Go home, Graham,"
Ricker said. He looked ready to do the same.
"You first."
All the laughing I'd done had made me dizzy. I needed another little rest before I could make it to Beaumont. With a furrowed brow, Ricker turned toward the dorms. He walked a couple of paces and then stopped.
"You okay?"
he asked. "Yep," I said, because my mouth couldn't decide between yeah and yep. That happens sometimes, especially after I drank a shit ton of whiskey and a pitcher of beer. He pointed up the street.
"Prove it."
So I went, or at least I tried. But my feet weren't in the mood, really. I tripped on the curb. Ricker's hand was at my elbow immediately, which kept me from pitching forward onto the asphalt.
"Oh, crap,"
I said as I swayed. He smirked in that patient way that people look at a drunk, but even that was enough of a smile to stir me. Since my defenses were for shit right then, I couldn't help but stare at his mouth. I'd tasted that mouth so many times, and it had always left me wanting more. Every freaking time. Just remembering it filled my head with ideas. Bad ones. The playful curve of his lips. I was leaning towards them even now.
Whoa, Ricker said, easing me by the arm down to sit on the curb.
Crap. I almost made an ass of myself. No, I was making an ass of myself right now. I'd almost made a bigger ass of myself a minute ago.
What are you doing?
I asked him next, because he had his phone in his hands and was tapping on the screen.
Calling Bella.
Not Bella, I said immediately. Anyone but Bella. She'll want to talk about my addiction. Thing is, she's got it wrong. It isn't the whiskey that's making me crazy.
God, I could not shut up. In fact, I kept on babbling about my problems. I rambled about Thanksgiving. I don't even know all the shit I said to him.
The only saving grace was that Ricker seemed to tune me out.
Yeah, Bella? Hey, I'm just outside, and I think Graham needs a little help.
Yep, pretty sloppy. He keeps mumbling about tight pants or something. He looked at me, frowning.
Sitting on the curb, he said into the phone. You can't miss us.
Turn me into the cops? I asked when he'd hung up.
Nice of you.
You'd rather I leave you in the gutter? He jammed his phone into his pocket.
I left you in the gutter.
Damn, that just popped out.
Oops, I said.
Forgot our deal, sorry. Supposed to not talk about that. Shit stays buried, you know? Easier that way.
Shut it, Graham, Ricker said, exasperated.
I looked up to see Bella and Hartley jogging towards us.
Thanks, Hartley said, relieving Ricker, as if I were a package that he'd signed for.
Bella leaned down, her face in my face.
You smell like Jack, she said.
Smart girl, I slurred.
Best of luck and good night,
Ricker grunted.
Hartley knelt down in front of me.
I'm only saying this once, he began, his handsome face serious.
Lay off the sauce, or I'm going to have to tell Coach that you have a problem.
I did have a problem.
And he was walking away from me right now.
And even though Bella decided that it was her turn to yell at me next, I tuned her out to watch Ricker's muscular ass disappear up the street and into the night.
7. Gong Show. December. Gong Show, a rough, dirty game of maximum intensity. Ricker. The interview itself was not that bad. One morning, the week after Thanksgiving, I waited in Coach's office with a young woman from the Harkness College press office. You don't have to answer any questions that make you uncomfortable, she assured me. Just look at me, and I'll tell the reporter that you're not going to answer. That sounded easy enough, I guess. I'll go get her if you're ready. I was never going to be ready, but I nodded anyway. A minute later, she returned with the reporter, a mild-looking mom type. I'm Cindy, the reporter said, putting her digital recorder down on the table between us. Thank you for meeting me, especially during exams. You must be busy. Sure, I said. Actually, I have my first exam next week, in Spanish. So if we could do this in Spanish, that would really help. She grinned. No can do. Not only do I not speak Spanish, I don't really speak sports. I've never interviewed a hockey player before. Do you have any tips for me? She was trying to put me at ease, I guess. I'm sure you'll be fine, I told her. We don't like to see the words bloodthirsty or violent brutes, though. She gave me a smile. Tell me why you left St. B's. Straight to the point. Great. Well, okay. On a Sunday night near the end of the regular season, that would have been last March, the head coach learned of my sexual orientation. He called me in Monday morning and told me to clear out my gear. He said, I don't want that in my locker room. She flinched. That must have hurt. She wanted to talk about my feelings, but I wasn't going there. Honestly, it's about the most lukewarm hate speech ever written. She tapped a pencil on her knee. It doesn't matter what words he used, though, does it? Were you surprised to be kicked off the team? Yay. Now I would get to tell the reporter how stupid I was. Yeah, actually, I was surprised.
St. Bees is a Catholic college, so I guess that makes me an idiot. But there's a pretty active gay student group. Not that I'd ever gone to an event. And also the college has sexual orientation in its non-discrimination clause. I thought that would count for something. I saw that too, she said. That's fairly progressive for a school with religious roots. I shrugged. I didn't know whether it was or wasn't. But when St. Bees started courting me and offering me scholarship money, Skippy made me look it up. You cannot play for them if they can toss you out for being gay, he had said. Grumpy that I wanted to go to school in Massachusetts instead of Vermont, where he'd be. Later, I'd wished that I'd listened. What did your teammates think? The reporter asked. I cleared my throat. I never got a chance to find out, you know. A few of them wrote slurs on my Facebook page. Her eyes widened. Did you document that? Seriously? Who would want to save a screenshot of assholes writing, "Faggot, I hope you die of AIDS"? No, I deleted my account instead. So the team did not stick up for you. Careful, I coached myself. I got a couple of texts that were very supportive. The guy who I was actually rooming with on road trips called to say that he thought the whole thing sucked. I didn't tell her that when I saw his name come up on my phone, I chickened out and let it go to voicemail. Later, I screwed up my courage and listened to the nice things he had to say. I'd never been any good at predicting who will turn out to be cool and who will be an ass. One of the faggot comments on my Facebook page was from the guy I used to lift with in the weight room. I thought of him as a friend. Called that one wrong. Still, I did not want this reporter writing that the St. Bees hockey team was a bunch of meatheads. It's important to remember that most of the team didn't really get a chance to be supportive or not. The coach was a real Napoleon type, and he showed me the door so fast I never saw most of those guys again. The reporter chewed on her lip. So you weren't out to your teammates? I shook my head. I was a freshman. I wanted to prove myself, and I just wanted to play hockey. She nodded slowly. How did your coach find out anyway? Even though I'd been expecting this question, I still got a cold sweat when she asked it. I'm not going to give details about that. Okay. Her eyes lingered on me. So it wasn't you who volunteered that information to your coach? Not in a million years. Did you plan to stay in the closet for 4 years, or were you waiting for the right moment? Good question, lady. I didn't have a plan yet, I told her. I thought I'd have a while to figure it out. After that, it got easier. Cindy went on to ask me about my transfer, and that was a less personal conversation. Your uncle called the coaches and explained the situation? Yeah, he did that for me. And I'm 10 kinds of lucky that it worked out. It's not only that Coach didn't mind the circus. It was just dawning on me that Coach must have known reporters and news stories would happen. But also that he needed a wing. So, the schools that said no to you weren't necessarily discriminating against you? She asked. Hell no. The entire Division I roster isn't very large, and there are hundreds of guys who want to play. You must be a pretty valuable player. I wasn't touching that. I guess we'll find out. She grinned. And how have your new teammates treated you? They've been great, I said immediately. The season is going well. No problems. Unfortunately, I spoke too soon. As luck would have it, our next scheduled game was against St. Bees. Coach called me into his office again before practice on Friday to discuss it. How's this game going to go, do you think? He asked. We can beat 'em, I said. The first line is tight, but their bench isn't very deep. Coach looked out the window for a moment, and then back at me. Do you think you should play? What? Of course I'll play, why wouldn't I? He sighed. The article didn't publish yet, at least. It's going to make St. Bees look bad. If anybody reads it. He swiveled his chair toward me again. They will. And you're going to get even more attention. God, I hoped he was wrong. Let's just beat St. Bees. Coach grinned. I like your style, kid, I really do, so I'm putting you on the first line for the St. Bees game. Make me proud. Awesome. I will, Coach. I really thought I could. I was wrong.
Graham. I was not at all prepared for what happened at the St. Bees game. It was a home game against a so-so team. What could go wrong? Just everything. The first sign of trouble came a half an hour before face-off. During that last 30 minutes in the locker room, every guy was busy getting amped up in his own special way. Some people sat quietly in a corner, thinking calm thoughts. There was a lot of joking around and smack talk, too. The place was crowded, with everyone strapping on their gear. There were two trainers in the room, too, taping up muscles and helping to stretch out tetchy limbs. I went into the hallway supply cabinet for some orange hockey tape. Don't laugh when I tell you that I play better with orange tape. Hockey players are some of the most superstitious people you'll ever meet. Just ask Hartley about his lucky underwear. At the distant end of the hallway, I saw Coach come out of his office. But before he got very far, a gray-haired guy in a St. B's jacket came wheeling out of the visitor's locker room. He got up in Coach's face. "There's a reporter up my ass, and it's your fucking fault," he barked. There was a tense silence, and then I heard Coach chuckle. "Really?" He stood his ground, even though the other guy was practically spitting into his mouth. "That can't be true, because I thought you had a team policy against taking anything up the ass." Although the other coach's back was to me, I could hear the fury in his voice. "You want this bitch asking me questions, do you? You think you can make my team look bad?" Again, Coach chuckled. "You don't need my help with that." I jammed the tape into my hockey shorts, freeing up my hands in case the other guy threw a punch at Coach. But the bastard only yanked the visitor's locker room door open and disappeared inside again. With a pounding pulse, I ducked back into our room to finish taping up my stick. A minute later, Coach stalked in, looking tense. "Listen up," he barked. The room got quiet immediately. "Your opponents want to win tonight, but we want it more, right?"
"Yeah,"
everyone shouted as one. Coach was pacing near the door.
"Look, their coach is a blowhard with a nasty temper, and his offensive line is sketchy this year because we stole one of their best players. We didn't play this team last year, but you saw how it is on the tapes. To win this thing, they need to get under your skin. Are you going to let them?"
"No,"
we hollered together. "Good, because I need you to remember that you're bigger than that. This game is going to be about finessing the puck. This game is going to be all about attitude. And the team that keeps the coolest head is going to win. So I need you to repeat after me. Attitude is destiny.
Attitude is destiny."
"Okay. Let's kill him. Get out there."
Coach's face looked as tense as I'd ever seen it. Bella put a hand on my shoulder.
"I'm pretty sure that quote is supposed to be character is destiny."
"Yeah? I think I keep that critique to myself.
I was planning on it."
"Hey, Bella." I gave my skate laces one more tug and stood up.
"Yeah?
Any reason Coach would be talking to reporters?" She frowned.
"No idea. Why do you ask?"
"Just something he said." My teammates had begun to stream out the door, catcalling and whooping it up. "Let's go."
"Kill him tonight, Graham."
"Yes, ma'am." "But, yeah, not so much." For the first 8 minutes of play, I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. In the first place, Hartley was kicking ass, so the D-men like me didn't have a whole lot to worry about. My teammate Trevi, a junior wing, fed Hartley an early goal, and all seemed well. Things deteriorated very quickly about 9 minutes in. On the next face-off, I watched one of the St. B's wings, a giant with the name Eros printed on his back, yapping into Trevi's face. I couldn't hear what was said, but the look on Trevi was far past ordinary annoyance. His face turned the color of raw meat. The next time I noticed Eros, he was leaning over Orson, who was minding the goal tonight, and Orson's jaw was as hard as concrete, though he didn't remove his eyes from the field of play. So I knew this Eros must be a real piece of work. But I didn't get to witness his assholery firsthand until a little later. St. B's